Hey everyone, it's Dan Favalli. Remember to search Blue Wire Buckets in iTunes or Spotify for more NBA content.
Hey, hi, hello, and welcome back to the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am Dan Favalli, your third favorite co-host around these parts. Today, Mo and I will be talking to Paul Garcia, who covers the Spurs for Project Spurs and is the host of the Spurscast podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul Garcia NBA, spelled exactly as it sounds. If you can't tell from that, I'll let you know right now we're doing our Spurs deep dive on this podcast, and we think you'll really enjoy it. We get into the weeds with San Antonio with Paul. Did a fantastic job outlining current players on the roster, what we can expect for them over the offseason, and all that jazz. Before we get started, however, I just want to continue reminding, imploring, begging, pleading with everyone to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also find us wherever else you are consuming your podcasts. However, iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you are out there, that you are listening, and that we are not yelling into the great unknown void. So please, search Hardwood Knox on iTunes. It takes 10 to 15 seconds out of your day. Throw us a 5-star rating. 5 stars only. If you have any comments, please, we like reading them in the reviews section. Any critical feedback as well, we will take it into account. If you have not subscribed, definitely do that already. And if you have, shout-outs on Twitter are appreciated. Stealing people's phones and subscribing them to the Hardwood Knox podcast is equally appreciated. Anything that helps us get the word out there about how cool and fun and family-oriented this podcast is. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Dan Favalli. You can follow Mo on Twitter at Mo_MBA. That's at MoDakHIL_MBA. Andy is at Andrew D. Bailey, spelled as always exactly like it sounds. You can follow the show on Twitter as well at Hardwood Knox. Finally, if you have not checked out the Blue Wire Podcast Network and all the cool shows it has to offer, remedy that immediately. We are pumping out great basketball and NFL content on the regular with other sports sprinkled in there as well. Follow Blue Wire Pods on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. With all of those housekeeping notes now out of the way, we move on to our deep dive into the San Antonio Spurs with Paul Garcia. Hey, hi, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am Dan Favalli coming at you with my co-host, Mo DeKeel, and we are also super pleased to be joined by Paul Garcia, who covers the Spurs for Project Spurs. He is also the host of the Spurscast podcast. If you do not follow him on Twitter, I highly recommend you change that post-haste. He can be found at Paul Garcia NBA, spelled exactly like it sounds. If you couldn't tell, we're going to get into some San Antonio Spurs off-season slash long-term outlook stuff. Very excited to cover this beacon of what is normally stability, but they have some interesting questions facing them this offseason. First and foremost, how are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing very well, guys. Thank you for having me on. We were kind of just talking how all three of us are on different parts of the United States, so for each of us, it's a little different, the time frame.
Yes, we thank you for getting up early, Paul, and Mo, thank you for getting up early, too. When I pinged you about this, I was actually surprised that you were game, so I appreciate that as well.
I'm a bit of a early bird anyway, so not a big deal for me. My biggest thing is always trying to figure out when you send the times, going like, is this what time is it LA time before I screw it up? Because you know there's going to be a day where I'm going to think 1 hour and I'm going to be an hour late an hour early because I'm not good with the math.
I like to do it by like the guest time zones, but I wish like. I'm sure you guys have this too, like when radio stations ask you to come on, that they would do it by the time zone they know that you're in, because I have trouble keeping track of all the like Pacific time or Mountain time or Central time or Eastern time requests. I'm always petrified that I'm going to screw up the math on the time.
Well, a funny story is like I had during the playoffs, somebody had asked me if I wanted to join on a pretty big radio show. And I was like, absolutely. Said yes. It was 7 to 10 a.m. And then when we locked down a time, then I realized it was, oh, that's Eastern time. So I didn't want to cancel anything, but basically I got up at like 4:30 in the morning to make sure I didn't oversleep. Then nailed the sound awake for this radio hit I did around like 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that's too early. But now at least I know I can schedule a podcast for 7 a.m. Eastern time, and I'm just going to count on you to be there.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So, Paul, the Spurs. There's like long-term implications of how many roster spots they have, which you wrote about, and we're going to get into that eventually. But I wanted to start out by what you kind of thought of their draft. Whether I know they're a team that's almost impossible to decode, at least to me, around draft time, and then we just accept whatever they do. But were you at all surprised by Luka at number 19? Were you a little bit more surprised that they went with yet another guard in Keldon Johnson at 29? Is this something you expected?
Okay, the expectation was there that, you know, most of us, cover the Spurs, we thought that they do two targets of those first-round picks. They'd get a big guy, and they'd also get some sort of wing, because that's kind of what they've needed. Now, it was the order that they chose these guys that was really, really, I think, surprising for a lot of fans, also for some of us in the media, where you had guys like Brandon Clark, you had guys like Nasir Little, still there at 19, and instead they went with the guy that they've been scouting for a long time, and Lucas Simonic. Where you know that he's probably, just based on this roster right now, you know that he's really young, 19. He's probably going to be playing a lot in Austin in year one. Whereas those other two guys might have been able to kind of try to get some rotation minutes in year one. Then at 29, Keldon Johnson was actually a really good pick for them, where it was a little bit more surprising that he fell that far. I saw a lot of mock drafts have him right outside of the lottery from like 15 to like 24 in that range. So the fact that Keldon was there was a really good pick for the Spurs. I think that had you just flipped it, if they took Keldon at 19 and then they took Simonic at 29, it would have been more appeasing to fans. But the fact that it was like in the opposite order, and like I was on a podcast yesterday where I was telling the other guests that I feel like Luka in the San Antonio base is always going to be kind of compared to Brandon Clark and Nasir Little in those early years of his career, just because they could have chosen those two players and they didn't. They went with Luka instead.
I think Mo has told me to pump the brakes on this before. I probably place too much stock in fit when we're looking at drafts. And I just, like, this team, maybe it's not their MO either way, but I thought they just needed like a combo wing, someone who could defend both the 3 and 4. And I think they end up with, you know, guys who, I guess Keldon Johnson's fine. He has the wingspan. It's almost 6'10", I think, to go 2 and 3. But you're not going to go with Simonic to guard any wings, I don't think. So I just thought maybe they try and target a combo forward, especially knowing that Rudy Gay, while we all expect him to be back, was entering free agency, and that they don't really have that other guy aside from Gay on their roster right now.
Yeah, and you know, that's why I think that, I don't know if that player was there at that range, at 19. I know that P.J. Washington was a guy that they really wanted. I know Rui Hachimura had been rumored if he had fallen that far, but obviously he went really early in the lottery. So I think that they definitely wanted that 6'8 type of guy. I don't know if that player was there. So I think that they went with Keldon. And then really in Coach Pop's system right now, if you look back at the last 2 years, he plays a lot of basically what I like to call two shooting guard lineups, where he has like DeRozan slot at the three. He'll have like somebody like Marco Bellinelli at the three. So I feel like in their system right now, in their rotations, they do have a lot of lineups, the Spurs, where since Kawhi's gone, they just put two shooting guards together in most of their lineups, and there's no natural like 6'8 guy in there anymore.
I guess they kind of have to do that now too, with mm-hmm. their roster so guard heavy. Mo, did you have any thoughts on the Spurs' draft day?
No, I mean, my thing with the Spurs is just like they're always going to draft somebody, and then later on I'm going to be like, okay, I see why you did it. I love it. it's just, they do a very good job scouting, and obviously better than anybody, I think, internationally. And that's why I'm not surprised they went with Luka, you know, at 19 when they did, just because this is something they take very serious in, and they take a lot of pride in it, having basically become the international team before it was cool. So I think that's kind of what I expect from the Spurs in that sense. It'll be interesting to kind of see how they build, but you know, you kind of hinted at it, Dan. I'm never like thinking these guys are going to come in right away and have immediate success, especially in San Antonio, as Paul probably is used to by now. They mm-hmm. they kind of drip feed these rookies into situations and eventually sort of build these guys up. So it's not like I you know, I don't have crazy expectations on these guys, you know, from the Spurs organization.
Paul, did you have any strong impression? Well, I'm assuming you had strong impressions, but DeMar DeRozan finishes year one with the Spurs. Was there anything that you were surprised by in a good way, a bad way? And my more specific question for him is, when you look at now how guard-heavy this roster is with Murray coming back, Derek White's emergence, Lonnie Walker, we'll assume that he'll be healthy and maybe actually play next time. Now you have Keldon Johnson. With him playing more small forward, I know they steered completely away from his three-point volume, which has never been his game, but do you think that that's going to need to change at all a little bit if they want him to successfully coexist with DeJounte Murray, or are you just not concerned with that at all?
No, I think that they definitely want that to increase a little bit. Obviously, you know, he won't become a high volume shooter just overnight, but you know, they slowly want it to happen. Coach Pop mentioned that in his postseason interview, where he basically said, you know, we got to get LaMarcus and DeMar to take more threes. And for me, honestly, though, it's just really hard to do that with two of these guys on the roster. I think that if they had one player who wasn't a high volume 3-point shooter, it'd be fine. But the fact that they have two of their go-to guys who just don't do that, I think that the adaptation to that will be easier for LaMarcus because he does do more of the pick and pop, whereas DeRozan, a lot of his mid-range looks come off the dribble type of off of plays. So, you know, I think that they definitely want to see a little bit of an increase. I don't know how much he'll boost it up, maybe one or two attempts a game if they're wide open, those kind of spot-up shots. But you know, I was really surprised from my side, because, you know, I basically only saw DeMar whenever I watch East Coast games and stuff like that when he was with Toronto, so I didn't pay too much attention for him. I know there was a lot of the stuff about the mid-range, which that was true, but I was really surprised at his playmaking was really, really impressive in my opinion, where he was really good about penetrating the defense, getting the defense to shift, focus on him, and then kicking out. He was the leading guy on the Spurs who got most of their role players their 3-point shots. So for me, it was just more about his facilitation that was really impressive. His on-ball defense wasn't horrible, especially when he was engaged. But then you did see, you know, what people were referring to when he does fall asleep, when he doesn't take it as seriously, putting all that effort on the defensive end. And I was surprised by that. Even being under Coach Pop, I thought that might have lit a fire in him to be a little bit more, you know, put more emphasis on the defensive end. But he even had lapses during the playoffs with under Coach Pop. So that was kind of my impression of DeMar.
His maybe he's just easier to scheme for in the playoffs. Mo could probably speak better to this than me, but or you as well, obviously. But his like deceleration in the pick and roll and just sort of change of pace stuff over the past 2 or 3 years, that's something that's really stood out amid his evolution. I just feel like these past 2 or 3 seasons he's been a fantastic playmaker.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like really where his growth has been. I mean, the fact that he averaged, you know, just over 6 assists this season was at least a surprise for me. Maybe I haven't been paying enough attention to him, but his ability to kind of facilitate a lot more was something that surprised me and I thought was really kind of helpful for the squad once Murray went down. I mean, it was kind of a weird season in the sense of, you know, there's a lot of high expectations. Paul, you can probably speak to it a bit, and I'm sure we'll get to it, but like high expectations that this was going to be a huge year for Murray. Then he goes down with an ACL and it kind of changes things and you have to sort of figure out rotation. So DeRozan kind of being able to create for others and make plays for guys and create out of the pick and roll, like you said, Dan, it was huge for the team. I mean, I have to be honest, I didn't expect them to be even in the playoffs this year. So, you know, it was a big jump for him. I was surprised by that. I don't know if that was the one thing where I was like, damn, okay, DeMar, go get it.
With, you know, Mo mentioned Murray, does it change the calculus of how the Spurs sort of go from here now that they have DeRozan? I don't know. I'm assuming the plan and, like, is it nuclear, I guess what I'm trying to say, to think that will they maybe bring Murray off the bench to start when he's coming back? I know you said they're fine with guard-heavy lineups, but the spacing gets really tough if you have Aldridge and DeRozan and Murray on the floor at the same time, and then White was great, but he hasn't proved himself to be like this high volume 3-point shooter either. And so do you think that's on the table, or is this just very much, you know, Murray was supposed to be that swing prospect for the Spurs last year? Mo said it. Everyone pegged this past season as his breakout year. And so he'll immediately be in the starting lineup and we can, you know, depend on the Spurs to run their off ball stuff that will then manufacture space there that way.
Yeah, that's actually a big question here is what kind of lineups are they going to throw out there, especially the starting lineup? Some of us have assumed in the media that they might start Murray at the one, put White at the two, and then keep DeMar at the three. Try that out. And if the spacing is terrible, if the defensive benefits aren't worthy enough to or that beneficial to make those gains those decreases on offense, well, then maybe you do got to experiment with either bringing Murray off the bench or bringing Derek White off the bench as type like a six man, a Monty Ginobili type role for either of those players. But I think that they definitely want to try both of them out together, White and Murray, just because their defensive presence. I mean, we saw it from both of them. Murray, before he got injured, was an all NBA level defender. Derek White, got some votes for all defensive team, even though he only played, like, I want to say like 70 or 80% of the season, because he too was hurt to start the year. So I think that they definitely want to try having just two guard lineup out there, like they used to be able to have with Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, where they could just have those two guys play your two best offensive perimeter players, and then obviously those two guys would also hide a lot of the weaknesses of DeMar being out there with them. But again, like you mentioned, the spacing issue is there. Murray was, before he got injured last year in the preseason, we did get to see him, and he was he had put all these videos on Instagram of him developing his jump shot, and it looked good in the preseason. I mean, he was really confident just coming off the screen if the defense was going under, and he'd take that shot with confidence, and the form looked good. Chip England's worked with him on that the last two or three years. So they were really expecting a big season for Murray. I'm pretty sure they're expecting it now. Especially because next season he can become a restricted free agent. I know that they can give him an extension now up until before the season starts in October, but I don't know if that's very likely just because of the injury situation. So I think they are definitely expecting a huge season from Murray. And again, as far as rotation, I'm really puzzled. I think Pop's going to really experiment with a lot of different things, whether it's bringing guys off the bench or having them all start, or figuring it out so he finds something that he likes.
And Dan, like, that was the thing, was his shot was the thing that they thought had improved the most, which is what made them think that this was going to be the leap year. So, as Paul was saying, like, having him being able to step behind screens in preseason and hit shots before he got injured was kind of the flashes that everybody was hoping was going to be a consistent thing. Obviously it's easy to do in practice when you're shooting with Coach England and all that, and it's a different thing to do it in games. So that's the thing everybody's going to really keep an eye on, because if he can knock down those shots, then that does really sort of open up the spacing a bit more for them.
Do either of you, and I'll throw this to Paul first, do you consider, like, trying really hard to hash out an extension with him this summer, since he's coming off an injury? Maybe you could get him cheaper. I know he's a clutch guy, I believe, so he's rep by Rich Paul, and I don't know if you're going to end up getting a bargain, but I'm wondering if this might be a nice opportunity team-wise for them to lock him maybe at a friendly price point if he's looking for that long-term security after suffering that ACL injury.
Yeah, I would point to somebody like Dante Exum's extension that he recently got with the Utah Jazz, around $9.5 million each season for like 3 years. I think that's a pretty safe type of contract, where again, he's coming off an injury where we haven't seen him play. And like you mentioned, Dan, though, I don't know if Clutch would be okay with that. But, I think that conversation might take place because they can have it between July and October this coming summer. So they have some time to have that conversation. I don't know if it'll happen. Or if not, I mean, if he goes into restricted free agency next summer, well, then obviously the league is setting his price for him and seeing how much he's worth after this coming season with the Spurs. So, as far as a percentage, I'd say maybe like a 50-50 that they get something like that done in extension.
I know his cap hold next year, if they let him go under, like, there's a point where if you want to make sure maximize your cap flexibility, that just working with his cap hold if you can't hash out an extension. But Mo, if the deal was like $14 or $15 million a season now, are you waiting, or would you extend him and not want to risk it into restricted free agency? Just my argument would be, I don't necessarily know where I fall on this. I'd probably say you sign him to it. I know the smaller cap hold is valuable, but next year's free agency class is rough, and so I feel like any quality players might be subject to over the top bids from teams that want to make a splash when they know that the pickings are so slim.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know if 14, 15 million is where I want to commit to. I think the sweet spot is kind of like in that XM range, that 9 to 10 million sort of range. I think that's where I'm like, okay, we can make a deal happen. But otherwise, I want to see what he looks like on the court, coming off from an ACL. And the ACL is not what it used to be, right? It used to be like, wow, this is kind of career threatening. Now it's more, you know, we've seen a lot of guys come back from it and do just fine. Especially how young he is, he should be all right. But you want to kind of, you got to be a little bit cautious. So I think like 14, 15 is probably too high for me. I think at that point I'm willing to just kind of wait it out, see how he does during the season. But if I can get him at 9 or 10 and he values that security and we can make that deal happen, that's something I would probably do in that regard. And I, at the end of the day, he's still a restricted free agent. So it's not like I'd right. worry too much in that sense. It's not like I feel the pressure of, man, I'm going to lose him for nothing in this situation. So I wouldn't, if I'm the Spurs, I wouldn't really go into a deal that I don't feel comfortable with.
Is that number too high for you right now, Paul, as well?
Yeah, I think so. When you get, I think, well, yeah, definitely when you get past like 13 for me, I think it's a little bit too high. Just because, again, the fact that that he is coming off that injury and you haven't seen him play. And then also they just don't have a huge history, the Spurs, in terms of extending their rookies outside of like Kawhi, outside of Tim Duncan, you know, Tony Parker, those kind of guys that were, you know, they're stalwarts.
And yes, the number I threw out was like double his cap hold as well. So that's certainly cause for pause. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED right in the comfort and privacy of your own home. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe medication that will be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/BlueWire for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/BlueWire. Derek White, is his, do you think that his offensive responsibility might increase next season, or is that a moot point since you have Murray coming back? I was wondering if we might see him do more off the dribble stuff there. And my more pressing question is, so now that Murray's coming back, are we going to have to see Derek White, who defended a lot of point guards? And I know that, you know, matchups are very fluid and so are schemes, but is he going to have to get used to maybe defending bigger wings now because you're going to have Murray on the court? And if you're going to play them with DeRozan, he's going to be the natural, I guess, option to then take the player on the perimeter that DeRozan can't cover?
Yeah, I think for sure. Now, as far as his offensive role, I am a little worried about that. I feel like you know, just him and DeRozan together, a lot of times there was some issues where like he wasn't, you know, he would become just kind of a spot up shooter because DeMar had the ball in his hands. He liked to run the pick and roll a lot, and luckily enough in the playoffs they got Derek to be a little bit more aggressive until Denver, you know, schemed around and shut him down. However, you know, having another ball handler in there with Murray, you really feel like if they all start together, that you know, it's going to be Derek's. Evolution as a playmaker is going to kind of decrease a little bit. I know that he's already made the comment that he's working on his threes. That's his main focus right now, because obviously he knows he's going to be getting a lot of spot up opportunities. So that's why I do ask that question, if you know, maybe they will eventually go back to putting him off the bench and making him like the sixth man, because if he's your guy off the bench, well then now all of a sudden he can create on his own. You know, he can be that guy who can create a pick and roll for the secondary unit where they don't have a lot of that playmaking coming off the bench. Now, as far as defensively, I think that he, Coach Pop is comfortable with him guarding a lot of different wings. I know that one specific game last year that came to mind was when the Raptors played the Spurs in San Antonio, and also in Toronto, was that Pop wanted Derek White on Kawhi Leonard, and you know he you know, obviously no one can stop Kawhi. We saw that in the NBA Finals, but he guarded him pretty well. You know, as much as he's only a 6'4", 6'5", he has a really good frame on himself, Derek White. He's a really good defender. He's a very smart, high intelligent kind of guy where he won't get himself in too much foul trouble. So you know, I think he's comfortable guarding different wings. You know, I think when you put on somebody like LeBron, that's going to become an issue, but there aren't a lot of LeBron James in this league. So I think that, just, you know, as long as it's not a huge, like, physical overpowering type of three or four, I think Derek's okay. And then, of course, you know, he can just switch off with Murray whenever they run a pick for those two.
Mo, as someone who's a little bit more removed from the Spurs organization, who do you think is more important to this team's future right now, White or Murray?
I'm probably going to go Murray. The Spurs don't hype up a lot of guys, right? Like, that was the thing that was surprising going at the start of the season, was like hearing the talk of like, yo, Murray's going to really have a breakout year. You never hear that from the organization. It's never really kind of like that. So they were excited, and they were kind of electric with that. And I think he's kind of got the frame and what they want kind of going forward. I think he's an interesting tall guard sort of deal. I think he's probably more important to me. I mean, and I don't think, like, this isn't to say anything bad about White. White had a freaking breakout playoffs and was phenomenal for the team all year. I mean, checking Kawhi, like Paul was saying at times, and accepting every challenge that went his way. So, it's not like White isn't important, but I just think Murray kind of has that, just a little bit of that extra edge right now. And I think that's kind of a guy that they've sort of pegged being a core piece going forward.
Do you agree, Paul?
Yeah, I agree 100% there. Murray just has that, he just doesn't, right now, in my opinion, he just doesn't have there's not a ceiling on him yet where he can just take his game to another level, just depending on how much more he adds. He's got, the athletic ability, he's got the physicality, he's got a lot of different, aspects that White just doesn't have that could evolve well for Murray, to get to one day possibly being an all-star down the road. Again, it just depends on where his game goes and how much productive he is. But I feel like, yeah, definitely there's more of a ceiling for him than for White.
Were you able to get any type of feel for Lonnie Walker's game over the course of his rookie year and slash, I know we dealt with a bunch of knee and ankle stuff last year, I believe. Do you think there's going to be an opportunity for him to crack the rotation more often and get more minutes? Is that going to still be hard pressed? Because again, when you look at this roster with all the guards on it, or even just, again, coming back to that general question, in such limited playing time, were you able to get a feel for what he was able to do at all last season?
I mean, like you said, he spent most of his time in Austin. He was hurt like two or three times during the year. When he played in San Antonio, when he played in some garbage minutes or when, the Spurs were down by like 10 or 15 and Pop was mad, he put in Lonnie just to, try to inject some sort of energy into the game. And, he had some success. He had some failure doing that. From what I took away basically was that he was still not ready yet for the NBA level. You just look at him athleticism wise, you look at him when he's in the game and he just doesn't feel with the rest of the Spurs. I mean, he's just jumping out of the gym. He's running up and down the court like super fast. The other guys, you just can't expect that from somebody like Marco Bellinelli or DeMar DeRozan. So in a way, you just see his athleticism and it just stands out that, wow, they are missing this kind of player. However, he's not quite ready yet for, just to do what they need him to do, whether, that's like when they move the ball to him and it was a spot up, he can shoot the three, but like when a defense closed out on him, he didn't make the right kind of plays. He ran the pick and roll where, right away, the first thing he did was when the pick was set, he just right away went for like a mid-range jumper. So, he just needs the reps, in my opinion. Now, I am worried that he's not going to get those this coming season as of right now, just because of all the depth they still have there at the guard position. You have DeJounte coming back, which means that Bryn Forbes might move to the bench, and Pop really, really likes Bryn Forbes. He trusts him a lot. He was really good in the playoffs for them. So you got Bryn Forbes in front of him. You still got Marco Bellinelli there, who Pop's still going to trust ahead of a second-year player in Lonnie Walker. You still got DeRozan, like we talked about. So there's just a lot of more guards and wings ahead of him in the rotation right now, and I feel like he really, really has to play really well in training camp in the early part of the season to try to – he's basically, in my opinion, trying to battle Bellinelli and Bryn Forbes for any kind of minutes. So he has to basically play better than them. And the area it's going to be is on defense, which isn't quite his, the area that I saw, that he was doing well, is more so his offense. So I feel like if he can go to another level on defense, that Bellinelli and Forbes definitely can't, then that's the only way I can see him cracking the rotation for some kind of minutes.
That's the best way to crack the rotation, especially in San Antonio, right? If you can find a way to defend, Pop will find a way to play you.
Bryn Forbes was surprising. I thought he was going to be like a huge problem defensively for the Spurs last year, and it didn't seem like he was. And I also had probably close to zero idea that I know he cooled off towards the end of the regular season, but he was, I would say for most of the year, probably their best, just off the dribble shooter. I know you have DeMar DeRozan, but before the All-Star break, Bryn Forbes was shooting over 40% on a pretty high volume of pull-up three-pointers. Was that like, did Bryn Forbes' performance take you back at all, Paul, or is that something you saw traces of in the season prior?
No. He really, really went to another level last year in terms of just everything he did. I mean, when we talked about, like, when Murray got hurt and then Derek White in the first part of the season, it was actually Bryn Forbes who had to play the one for San Antonio. He was their starting point guard for, like, the first 15 games of the season. So he had that responsibility on offense, and they did well with him there. And then, of course, he just slotted over to the two guard for the rest of the year, and Pop really, really liked him there. Pop just basically praised him nightly. I mean, he would say stuff like, we can't let Bryn, you know, we got to tear Bryn's contract, because if he sees that he's only making that much money and he's worth this much more. Like, Paul basically said that, you know, that they got a bargain for him and in terms of the production that he was giving them last season. Obviously, you know, his only weakness is the defense. And it's not because he doesn't try. It's just because of the physical frame. He's only 6'3". He's a very small guard, doesn't have long arms. So he does struggle there. But, you know, he really puts in the effort. He's a very smart player, IQ-wise, knows where to be in the right place. And like you mentioned, Dan, he's not afraid of a closeout. You know, he will put on the floor. He will take a mid-range shot. Sometimes he'll take it to the rim. And, you know, for me, what was really surprising was just the fact that, I mean, he was one of their consistent players throughout the playoffs. I know, like, guys like Marco Bellinelli, Davis Bertans, Patty Mills, those guys basically disappeared when Denver took them out of their comfort zones. But Bryn continued to produce throughout that seven-game series. He was always there. He was reliable. I didn't feel like he was going to miss a lot of his shots when he took them. So like I said, for Lonnie or even like somebody like Keldon Johnson, it's going to be hard for those guys to beat out Bryn from this rotation right now.
Yeah, he was Bryn for – I didn't realize he shot 48.4% from three in that Denver series. That is absolutely wild. Mo, are you sold on Jakob Poeltl as the Spurs' primary big now behind LaMarcus Aldridge, and not just because he's one of only two, basically, aside from Aldridge under contract? I know he's – like, you look at the analytics and what he does, and he's a good player, just like a beast on the glass. He makes nice passes and screens on handoffs. He's a pretty good diver. His defense around the basket is fine. Do you think his role or what he does is something that translates into – an appreciably larger role, because his minutes were tamped down for much of the year, and I know they increased towards the end of the regular season?
First off, I'd like you to refer to him by his proper name, which is Jake Poeltl.
First of all, Puddle's a fantastic pronunciation of what his name looks like, and I think that should be his official nickname on Basketball Reference. I don't know where Paul lands on this, but I think Jake Poeltl should be like the official Basketball Reference nickname for him.
Well, I'm going to look at his nicknames now on Basketball Reference, because now I'm curious.
I don't even think he has one, right? No, he doesn't. I'm looking at it now. That's criminal.
That's we need to fix that. And the fact that it's not littered right now with everything they did in that Game of Zones episode is really a failure of the internet. And I just say to the internet, do better, people. You know, to your question though, like, I'm not sure. I was never a huge Poeltl fan. I never thought like he was. I think he's kind of just a serviceable big, you know. I just don't feel like he's going to come in and give you huge starter minutes. He's not going to really kind of carry you. I think he's the kind of guy that comes in and gives you a lift off the bench. I think he gives you the energy you need, but I worry about asking him to do too much. Maybe I'm undervaluing him. But just from what I've seen in the 2 years in Toronto and even last year with the Spurs, I feel like this is the proper role for him. I don't feel like a bigger role and we're going to be like, wow, he's really good. Or it's not going to be a situation where we're blown away by it. I just think this is who he is. And that's fine. It's good. It's teams all need these types of guys to come in and kind of bring a little more juice and energy and whatnot. So that's kind of the way I look at it with Poeltl. I almost said Puddle. Poeltl.
Paul, basically the same question to you, but with the added layer of, can we now, is one maybe one of the benefits of how the Spurs have so little roster flexibility when you look at the body count, that we can get rid of those Jake Puddle, you're welcome, Mo, and LaMarcus Aldridge lineup combinations, because those were not good last year. Now I'm wondering if, because you have so few bigs, you can kind of deviate away from that. And I was also surprised, I was looking this up beforehand, that he played, this is from Cleaning the Glass, and so it doesn't include garbage time, but he played almost 650 possessions alongside LaMarcus Aldridge. And that, just looking at what they both do, I know the Spurs have valued dual big lineups in the past, but that just never felt like a combination that was going to be very productive for them.
Yeah, so you know, Pop, you know, it's weird because Pop experimented with those two throughout the year. So what he did was he started off with Aldridge and Pirtle together, your classic 4-5 lineup. Then during the season, he went to a more modern game where he put Rudy Gay as a four. He brought Jakob off the bench, and so the numbers obviously showed way better with that type of lineup. But then toward the end of the season, I want to say around late March, middle March, he started going back to that classic lineup of two bigs with Jakob and LaMarcus. And then of course it made sense against Denver just because they were, you know, more than one of those teams that does play the traditional style of two bigs with Paul Millsap and Nikola Jokic there. So as far as the playoffs, it was kind of expected just because that was the matchup they got. Now, again, I don't know why he went away from it though. He just didn't like it with Rudy at the four, or he even experimented with some Davis Bertans at the four, but he just didn't like it. I know he's made the comment, Pop, especially at the end of the year, that LaMarcus just wants to play the four. That's still the position that he's more preferential about. That's what LaMarcus has said in commentary. So I don't know if it's more so about just – I don't know if he's trying to make LaMarcus feel more comfortable by sticking him still at the four, which obviously isn't good. We see with the numbers. The numbers do not lie, that lineup with Jakob and LaMarcus really struggles together. So I don't know if that's what it's more about, the preference of LaMarcus. So, you know, right now, as far as starting the year, I think that he is going to try to, if they re-sign Rudy Gay, he will try to go back to with Rudy Gay at the four and LaMarcus at the five, which brings Jakob off the bench again. So, again, I kind of agree with Mo where I can't see his, you know, his game expanding that much more, where he's either going to be that traditional, you know, rim-running big, plays good defense, you know, as far as taking care of his area where he's responsible for, you know, whether that's starting next to LaMarcus or whether that's just coming off the bench and being a guy, you know, coming off the bench for them, basically. So I don't feel like he's going to get a huge expansive role coming into this next season. And again, like we've talked about, you know, this is the type of big man that's kind of just slowly, you know, dying out of the NBA, is that those classic guys who just, you know, kind of set screens, rim run, play style defense, but you know they just don't have that extra layer of offensive versatility, like shooting three or putting the ball on the floor, and that's kind of what Jakob was missing. And so, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with him.
Mo, here's a good question. I'm assuming you might have a better feel for it, having been around players so much in your career. What is the why are some players married to like their position, where it's, you know, Anthony Davis never really wants to play the five, even though that's probably his best position. Now, you know, as Paul mentioned with Aldridge, what is the rationale behind that?
I'm going to be honest. I have no idea, Dan.
That makes me feel really good. I'm not going to lie.
there's no I got it with there was a time, I think part of it was like when Shaq was a center. Like, I understood Tim Duncan saying like, no, I'm a power forward. It was about making like all-star games. Like, as silly as it is, like, there's always kind of like weird things like that, and that classification matters. I don't get it now, and it's just in general NBA, like, it's a positionless game now almost, you know, and the guys that are playing before, like 10 years ago, Rudy Gay playing the four wasn't something we thought of, you know, as normal. And now we're like, that's his position. And, you know, where Zion comes into the league and we're saying, you know, oh, he's going to be a small ball five too, and stuff like that. I think we've gotten away from just the classic definitions of position. And it's weird to see these guys kind of get hung up on it. So just to answer your original question, no clue.
That's actually really good to know then. And yeah, it's like, think about how far we've come where, like, I'm sure both of you remember, Kevin Garnett comes into the league and he basically played, I think, some three as a rookie. And so now to where we are now, where it's, yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge should not be playing the four. This feels like the question that I just don't want to ask because it's the Spurs. But when you look at, Paul, you published this piece at Project Spurs, everyone should check it out, about the roster count problems they're going to incur. If we assume Rudy Gay comes back, which is, one, the prevailing assumption, and two, I think, ultra necessary when you look at the makeup of their roster right now, they're going to be at 14 guaranteed contracts. Do you think, then, that there'll be a trade, however small time, or are the Spurs just more likely to add one free agent and then they'll run it back basically like this?
Yeah, I think that they got to. I think they're going to look at, you know, just inquiring, you know, what are teams willing to offer for Bryn Forbes, maybe for Marco Bellinelli, for Davis Bertans. Those are the three most attractive contracts in terms of their role players right now, just because they're on the last year of their deal. Those are players who could easily contribute to another team right now in anyone's rotation. And also, you know, for the fact of Bellinelli or Forbes, it does give those minutes like we talked about for Lonnie Walker. It gives him a chance to actually get a real role so the Spurs could see, you know, what is he turning into. That's what Derek White got, that's what DeJounte Murray got. In year two is when they got their first, you know, feet wet in terms of getting a real role with Coach Pop. So I feel like the only way those Lonnie Walker's getting any kind of minutes is if Burt Bellinelli or Forbes, one of those two guys, is gone. And then also you have to look at Davis Bertans. You know, if Rudy comes back, you know, we saw in the playoffs that Davis basically became a DNP where Pop was not going to play him. He just didn't trust him out there against Denver. He's really pigeonholed into that four spot where he's not as big enough or physical enough to guard fives today, but he's also not quick enough on the perimeter to guard threes. So Davis, I think, is also a name where you look at, is he going to get traded that way? You know, it might give Samanich some more minutes, or just, you know, in terms of, you know, if it could give LaMarcus more minutes at the 4-2, if that's where they want to go with those minutes too. So I think that those are the three players that if they are going to make a move this coming week, or, you know, when free agency starts to open up some roster space, I think those are the three players they're going to look at in terms of, you know, wanting to get those younger players some more minutes.
If they don't end up making a deal, does it maybe necessitate maybe more Davis Bertans at the five? I know they basically, I think it was like sub 30 possessions they used him at center last year. Is that something they might be more willing to go to in second units, or is it just very clearly Coach Pop has a hardline stance that Davis is just not going to be a center?
Yeah, I mean, it depends too on the opponent. You know, if they're playing the Warriors and Draymond Green's at the five, or like you said, they're playing the Pelicans and Zion's at the five, maybe they will do it. But, you know, not every team does that, especially now in the regular season. So, again, right now, just what I've seen, I don't think Coach Pop would trust him there at the five too much. But, you know, he's really going to be – he's not going to have a lot of minutes. So again, like when Rudy's healthy and he's either starting or coming off the bench, there's just not a lot of minutes for Davis. So I don't know how his game's going to progress in year three or four, I think it is for him. So again, that's kind of where I fall on that question.
Mo, do you think that there's going to be like a surprise? Maybe it's not a surprise, but do you think there's going to be like a roster shedding move here for San Antonio over the offseason?
I don't think so. I think they might bring in a center. I wouldn't be shocked if they found a way to bring in like Robin Lopez on a deal and kind of be a big man for them and move, as much as we just talked about Aldridge not playing the four, but move Aldridge to the four and go to that traditional lineup that they're used to. I don't see them making any moves where we're like, oh man, what a huge get for the Spurs. I can't even remember. I think the last time they made a trade that had everybody excited was for Richard Jefferson. and I think that was kind of, and obviously that didn't really, bring any, true success in the Spurs style or Spurs definition of success. So I'm not sure if we're going to see them really kind of go crazy or nuts. I think, you know, this year is going to really be about these young guards and the young kids they have and see what Murray can do, see what Walker can do, see what Forbes brings and how White develops and those things. I think there's going to be kind of a weird sort of transition this year from kind of, you know, the old to the younger guys. And I think we're going to start to see that if they do move a guy. I mean, I don't know, Paul, like what are the chances of somebody like Patty Mills, or is Mills just so entrenched into that organization at this point that it would be shocking to even think about moving him?
No, I think it's not really, it wouldn't be shocking, but it would be more so because of the contract. That's actually part of the one unattractive contract for them, is that, you know, Patty's making $12 million this year, then he also has $13 on the books next year. So I feel like the only way they're moving Patty is if, you know, they're trying to open up some sort of cap space, which I don't think that's happening. So, for me, it's more so about his contract, but also, you know, Coach Pop really likes him. He's basically the locker room leader there for them. So I don't see Patty getting moved.
I mean, you can't help but love Patty. Like, I dealt with him in Australia for three summers. You know, all the stories of how great he is in the locker room are almost underrated. Like, he's just a phenomenal dude. And I can only imagine how much better he is now, because I had young Patty. I can only imagine now how much better he is and more mature now in those regards. And he's just the kind of dude. I mean, like, we talk about glue guys, and I think the ultimate glue guy has always been Shane Battier, But Patty Mills is kind of in that mold of like just keeping guys together and stuff. And I think that was something we saw with the older teams, you know, that they loved Patty. And I think it's something that's going to continue on. So I do understand the reluctance to kind of move him. But I think there's going to be, I don't know, man, when teams strike out this summer, there might be a few teams that could be interested in having a guy like him and his shooting on their roster and even his leadership. So maybe that gets interesting. I'm also just kind of throwing it out there.
I'm just saying, I know Mo has to skedaddle, but if the Indiana Pacers are thinking about paying Ricky Rubio actual money, they should instead look at how much it costs to trade for Patty Mills. I'd rather pay him the 25-point-something million over 2 years than put Ricky Rubio on that team with that fit. Just that's Dan, just food for thought.
Dan, I do gotta leave. I just want to make fun of you a little bit for using the word skedaddle. I don't know.
You don't like the word skedaddle? Then you can skedaddle on out of here.
I just don't know the last time I heard it from somebody, not, you know, collecting Social Security. So, so it was an interesting use of a term. Sorry, guys, I do have to leave. Paul, I appreciate you. I love your stuff, man. So keep grinding. And, I'm part of the Spurs family. That was part of the reason why I wanted to jump on, Dan. I wanted to make sure you didn't really slander the Spurs at all. Otherwise, I'd have to come down and hit you at some point.
Don't worry. The slandering starts in T-minus 3 seconds when you exit the call.
Oh, boy. All right, guys.
All right, man. Take care.
Thanks, Mo. Harry's Razors is helping Blue Wire listeners with a better shaving experience. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Enough with the cheap razors. Go try Harry's now. It's just $3 for our loyal listeners. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your official trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure to go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for only $3. Paul, so we're actually close to the end here, so I won't keep you much longer either. But if they should have the non-taxpayers mid-level exception, unless Rudy Gay's next contract gets absurd, or maybe they try and go like the super balloon 1 year or around those lines. I know Mo mentioned them maybe targeting a big. If they had a few roster spots and were looking at league minimum money, okay. But I was really kind of hoping, like against hope, maybe that they'll use that money to, or at least even if they're not planning on cutting into or knifing into it substantially, that they'll prioritize maybe getting a combo forward. Do you see either one, what they'll do with their, what you think they'll do with their mid-level exception, and two, are there any guys that you think they should, that you'd like them to go out and target with that money?
Yeah, so this has kind of been an interesting question. I've kind of gone back and forth with this question, especially with some media members here in San Antonio, where we're looking at the roster, like we talked about, you know, it's 14 going to be max if Rudy Gay comes back, where they have one spot open only. I know that the one guy we've seen that they've been targeting in different reports is Bojan Bogdanović. Now, the problem there is that he may be out of their price range, where he may be getting over $15 million each season, which that's not the kind of money they're going to have. So that's interesting, the fact that they want somebody like Bogdanović, who's more of an offensive threat, who can kind of create from the 3 and 4, create his own shot. And that's something that they were missing in the playoffs, with somebody who can kind of, when the game slowed down and Denver took away LaMarcus and DeMar and Derek White, they didn't have a lot of options in terms of breaking down the defense. And that's kind of where they really struggled more so, was on offense in game 7. So it looks like they want another playmaker out there. As good as Rudy is, he's not quite there anymore in terms of just creating his own shot, kind of taking over an offense. He's just not able to do that. So I think that's why you've seen Bogdanović's name. Other players I like there at that 3-4 spot is somebody like Trevor Ariza, is a guy who they had a lot of interest in when he got bought out last year by Phoenix, I believe it was, or whatever that situation was, or got traded, should I say, where they wanted Ariza. He's a name who's more that defender, that 3-and-D type of wing. Then there's just a few other guys that just have that classic 3-and-D style, like Damari Carroll's out there. I don't know if
DeMar
those are the kind
Carroll
of guys
seems
that
like he'd be perfect for them.
Yeah, and again, for me, from my perspective, I just don't know if I think for me, like, if you get someone like DeMar Carroll or Trevor Ariza, I feel like then you're definitely taking away a lot of minutes from Lonnie eventually becoming something next year. Because again, there's just another veteran in front of him who Coach Pop's going to trust more so ahead of him. So again, I don't know who they're quite targeting in terms of big. I'm just thinking like a backup big, somebody who can either start next to LaMarcus or just come off the bench. And like Mo had said, Robin Lopez is the name to keep an eye on. Maybe like a switchable big, like Al-Farouq Aminu is out there. There's just those kind of players too, where it's gonna have to be somebody who's gonna be okay with coming off the bench at different times for this team. So I'm not quite sure where they're gonna use that money, that mid-level exception of $9 million. But you know, that's kind of where I'm thinking is some sort of wing or big.
A couple names that stood out to me. One, I think he might be too expensive, and he's kind of the antithesis of Spurs basketball. But what would you think of looking at like the combo wing spot of a Marcus Morris?
I think he would also be a good kind of player. Again, I'm not sure. I think like you're right, where his market thing's going to be a little bit more than the Spurs want to pay. I think he could get like one of those bloated contracts where a team misses out on certain. He's expected to make around $9 million to $20 million, depending on where he goes. Just depending, like if that's from Bobby Marks. Like if his team just needs to fill cap space, right, they can sign him to like an $18-20 million deal. Or if he wants to play on a playoff contender, he can go for that mid level exception.
The two other names, I think they're both would be more realistic, at least for the Spurs' price range. Well, this is assuming he killed his – I think he did hurt his value a little bit in the playoffs, but Nikola Mirotic.
Oh, yeah. No. Mirotic is a player that I really like for them, too. Again, he takes minutes away from Davis Bertans, but I'm also thinking that his contract is going to be a little bit more than the $9 million. I think he's going to get over $12 million coming up.
If these are short-term deals, then it's almost anything goes. And the last one, he's restricted, but with the Mavericks having to pay Kristaps Porzingis and Dwight Powell opting in with the intention of an extension, and then there's been the Al Horford noise. But Maxi Kleba would be interesting for this team if they're looking for a big, and maybe for some reason he ends up becoming unrestricted if Dallas does end up signing Al Horford. He probably doesn't just because his cap hold's so small, and I don't know how high. You know, I don't want to funnel, if I'm the Spurs, a good chunk of my mid-level exception into a big when looking at this roster. But he'd be, just as the floor spacing rim protector, he might be someone that you could start alongside LaMarcus Aldridge, but he could play, I would think, and he didn't play a ton of five in Dallas, but he could play in any iteration of the Spurs lineup, like next to LaMarcus or Pirtle, or you could even maybe use him at the five and, you know, have more confidence there with the second unit than you would with Bertans playing the center. So he's an interesting name. He's an interesting name for me in general. I've talked a lot about him for free agency, but the Spurs specifically, that's a name for them, again, depending on what his price range ends up being, that I find a little intriguing.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that we may see a situation where the Mavericks, you know, turn down his qualifying offer, or, you know, after like 13 days, they don't use it anymore. They just let him go into unrestricted free agency. And I think that definitely he's a player that the Spurs like to target. Again, my issue right there too is that he's taking minutes away from Bertans, and so that's kind of the big deal is for me is like, you know, if they get a big backup big, like we're talking about Cleveland or somebody like this, or you know, how much more do they what else do they want to see from Bertans? Are they just kind of saying we're giving up on him, or, you know, what are we doing here with Bertans? So I think that's a big question too is you know, when they make this kind of move or we start hearing the targets of the players that they're really interested in free agency, it kind of shows you exactly what they need they're trying to shore up on the roster.
Do you see a scenario then, since you've mentioned how important it might be, and I do agree with you that, you know, whether you sign a combo wing or a big, it's going to end up taking minutes away from younger guys. Do you see a scenario then where they basically don't add anyone, or if they do, it's an afterthought end of bench player, and then this is the team that we see now is the team. I mean, it's going to be basically the team they run it back with anyway, but that they're really going to prioritize like this setup right now, and that Rudy Gay ends up being like the most aggressive off-season move that they make.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And, you know, obviously the fan base here in San Antonio will be very upset if that ends up happening. Like if you just come in, if you end up just signing one, like, you know, last year they signed Quincy Pondexter and Dante Cunningham. If you sign a vet like that, just somebody who's going to be your 15th man, who's going to be a good locker room kind of guy, be there if somebody gets injured. If they end up with just that type of move, a guy who's not making, you know, getting that $9 million, I think the fan base will be upset. But it also just shows you that internally they think that they're younger guys are going to be able to project better than some of these vets who will be stealing minutes from them. Now, again, I do feel that I do find it interesting that Bojan Bogdanović has been connected there, that they've sought him in multiple reports. So I feel like that is a player that we see out on the market that they kind of want. but there's not a lot of Bojan Bogdanovic type profiles out there in free agency right now. So I feel like that's why maybe, you know, maybe they do just, you know, hold on to that $9 million and not spend it and just kind of roll over next year without having that big contract on the books of an extra guy at $9 or $10 million, somewhere like that.
I think that's a good segue, since someone asked about him, into the mailbag questions that I have flagged. So we have a few of those, and I will get you out of here. This is from the Muffin Makers Boy, at Muffin Makers Boy. Do the Spurs go after Bojan? And you kind of touched upon that already, but he also asks, is there a way to do that without shedding DeMar? And I think there was, I don't know if it was Bobby Marks that actually said it or if he got mistakenly aggregated or something, but that the Spurs would look to trade DeMar DeRozan to open the cap space for Bojan Bogdanovic, which is just, I find that to be absolutely wild. But on this multi-layered question, I guess I'm curious of your thoughts.
Yeah, so you know, the reason why you're gonna hear DeMar's, you even come in this coming week, and even as free agency starts the first week, when some teams strike out in free agency, you're gonna hear DeMar's name in trade rumors. And the reason why is because we haven't heard any kind of noise about the Spurs and him coming to some sort of contract extension, and that's gonna be a problem where if they can start on July 6th to sign up to get an extension going. But if they don't, well, then next summer he can walk for free. He has a player option at $28 million. So if he just, you know, opts out of that player option, and then he's becoming an unrestricted free agent in a market that doesn't have a lot of you know, high profile names, where he'd easily be one of the most attractive names for a lot of teams that are going to have cap space. So you are going to wonder this coming summer if they're going to try to look at moving him just to see what they get, because again, he can't walk for free next year. I'm not sure if he's going to, you know, re-sign or get an extension with the Spurs, just because, you know, he's already seen that loyalty doesn't exist in the NBA. He just saw with Toronto where, you know, no matter what you do, you know, you're never going to be just tied to that franchise unless you're, you know, someone like LeBron, or you're someone like Kawhi, or Kawhi's a bad example too. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know, those go-to players. So that's why you're going to hear those kind of rumors, is that there's no certainty that DeMar can even be on this roster starting in training camp, just because they're going to be watching him in terms of trade rumors up until February, just because, you know, they got to look at, are we going to get value from now or during the season? And so I think that's part of it, of why Bobby was kind of throwing that out there, and about Bojan just being that name that's consistently tied to them. Now, again, if you lose DeMar, and you're bringing Bojan, you're not getting the same quality of playmaking, but you're getting a guy who might fit a little bit better next to LaMarcus as your go-to big. Well, now all of a sudden you do have a good three-point shooter, a guy who's not afraid to take the three. He can guard kind of the three and four. Bojan, he's not excellent, neither is DeMar. So again, I think that more so they're looking at DeMar as a trade piece, just because it does open up that cap room to try to get someone like Bojan, but also because of his contract status. I think that's why you're going to see his name in trade rumors.
And I think the prevailing assumption was that DeMar was going to opt in to the $27.7 million, and he still could, but as we all mentioned before, the 2020 free agency class is just so shallow. If he enters it, there's a good chance that he would definitely get near max money, but maybe someone does throw him, even if it's a shorter-term max, just because, again, that free agency class really wants for any sort of star power, especially if we are operating under the guise that Anthony Davis is going to re-up long-term with the Lakers.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I've looked at that list. I think it's like Anthony Davis and like Draymond Green are like the two big names, and that's it. That's it. Like, you know, unless some of these guys that are coming into free agency now, like Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, they sign one-year deals, well, then that becomes more interesting next year. But again, there's just not a lot of players out there, and I think that teams are going to, you know, I think the cap goes up to projected to 116 next year, so a $7 million difference from this year. So, yeah, I mean, there's going to, even though DeMar may not be worthy of a max anymore, I think he will get a max just because of, you know, the limited amount of attractive players out there next year.
This next question comes from Augustine. That's at A Boy Augustine, Aboyagustin. He asks, how much cap space do they have, and how much if they trade Bertans? It's tough to get into exacts with it. I would change the question to, if they renounced Rudy Gay and maybe found a taker for Bertans, what's a realistic amount of cap space that they could open? I think it's even hard under that scenario. You know, if you renounce Rudy Gay and trade Bertans, you're working with, I have them at between 10 and 12 million, which is only marginally more than the non-taxpayers mid-level exception.
Yeah, it's actually, that's kind of what I just got. I just plugged in the numbers real quick, $12 million, that's all they have. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more, though. You know, it can get more with that, it's in terms of you can offer somebody who's going to get at the MLE for most teams. You know, the $9 million, you could get them to maybe sign with you just because you're giving them that $12 million. But again, it's not too much more where you're really, you know, you know, someone like Bogdanovich specifically, I think he's still going to get more than that $12 million in any case.
Vic at Massio Vic at M-A-C-E-O, V-I-K, asks, what's DeJounte Murray's this season? What are you expecting stats-wise? I will adjust the question again. If you had a peg and over-under for points and assists, and I set it at, let's say, 12 points per game and 5 assists per game, would you take the over or under in either of those categories?
So 12 points, man, that's actually the tough one right there, because it depends on his jumper and also because he's going to be next to Derek White and DeRozan. The points, I will take the over. The assists, I might take the under just because, again, I think he's sharing the court. I mean, he's sharing the ball with a lot of play. I think maybe around 4, 3.5 is a good number just because, again, he's sharing the ball, the court with DeRozan, maybe with Derek White, where he's not going to get as much reps to run the offense unless a trade is made. So that's why I put maybe over in points. He can still get those, whether it's offensive rebounds going coast to coast with his athleticism, his speed. But the assists, I just don't know if he's constantly going to be the playmaker for them.
I actually was, when I looked this up before, I was surprised to see that he only averaged 4.8 assists per 36 minutes in the 2017-2018 season. For some reason, I thought it was higher.
Well, me too. Interesting.
Final two questions here. One from Michael King at KingMichael314, spelled exactly as it sounds. If they are going to shop players, which guards should they be shopping on the trade market?
We talked about this earlier. I think that definitely, like we mentioned, it's got to be Marco Bellinelli and Bryn Forbes. Again, both two guys that are on attractive contracts for teams, can easily be inserted into playoff-type rosters. Even somebody like Bryn's so young that he can still play with like a young team like the Hawks or someone, just be a good shooter. So I think those are the two guards. Again, I don't think Patty's going to be shoppable just because of his contract. He has 2 years. DeRozan's out there again because of the situation with his player option next year, where maybe he's also shoppable. The three guys I don't think are going to be on the market are Lonnie Walker, Derek White, and Murray, just because those are their future guards right now. And also just because, you know, unless they're getting some sort of all-star back, I don't see those three guys in any kind of trade rumors.
The DeRozan stuff, too, really quickly, it's hard to find a team that I wonder who would be interested in a trade for him. Maybe Miami, if they're looking to just get that star. Perhaps also Orlando, if they think that they really need more playmaking, especially if Markel Fultz doesn't pan out, and so they have some interesting salary matching tools. I just find it hard, and I'm not trying to criticize DeMar DeRozan, who's a very good basketball player. He's made all NBA teams. I just don't know what the market would be for him if they did put him on the chopping block.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like two of those teams kind of already went away, which were the Pelicans and Lakers, just because, again, like, you know, I was looking more so for teams that had the salary cap space just to take them into. Some like the Pelicans would have worked there, but now I don't think that's the case, now that they've actually gotten rid of the fourth pick. And then also, you know, the Lakers are still there. You know, if they strike out, obviously it wouldn't be a great fit space-wise with Anthony Davis and LeBron. But if the Lakers strike out, maybe they do, you know, have that conversation with the Spurs to take him in. If they can get those other contracts traded that they still have on their books. So I, you're right. I haven't really looked too much into it, but I also just don't see a team right now that he fits well with.
The final question we have comes from Spencer Keel at Spencer Keel, K-E-E-L-E. Are the Spurs finally going to miss the playoffs this year? Such a wild question to me.
No, I still don't. I think Matt Moore had put a tweet out yesterday where the Spurs is over under before the free agency season begins is like 44.5, and he even said like take the over, and I agree with him 100%. Yeah, 44.5. I just feel like, you know, the stability is still there. Whether they as long as they keep DeRozan and Aldridge, you're gonna get much better defensively. I mean, they were in the 20s last year. They're ranked defensively, and now all of a sudden you're gonna have two really good defensive guards in DeJounte and Derek White right next to each other side by side. So, you know, whether Lonnie doesn't pop or none of these rookies like Samanich or Johnson even become players, I still feel like they have that corporate knowledge. They're always going to have a really good record to just get the wins against the bad teams most nights. And, you know, throughout the year, they were competitive. They had a win against all the other Western Conference playoff teams throughout the season. They had pretty good records against most of them. And you saw it against Denver. I mean, they went up to 7 games. They were almost there. They were just basically a bad fourth quarter away from being in round two, and they could have been playing Portland and seeing how far they go from there. But I just feel like, you know, they still have that system in place. They're a very disciplined team. We saw they were the lowest turnover team last year in terms of taking care of the ball. They were really good about that. And obviously, you know, you want to see their shot selection go to a more modern NBA style. I don't know if that'll happen with LaMarcus and DeMar together, but I just feel like everything's there for them to still be one of those top eight teams out West.
The only way I could see them hitting the under on that, and I mean, this is, like, to put it, they won 48 games, and like you said, took Denver to seven games, the two seed in the West, without what was supposed to be maybe their second or third best player in DeJounte Murray, and DeMar DeRozan was new, and Derek White missed how much of the year, and then he was still, like, that was a developing guy, and they still won 48 games. I don't see how they miss that over-under, like, they don't clear it. I would expect them to clear 45 victories again, unless catastrophic injury is always a problem, but the scenarios you were talking about, unless they decide, hey, we're going to trade DeMar DeRozan just into someone's cap space, and we're not even going to sign anybody. Like, we're just going to make this sort of a quasi-developmental year. That's really the only scenario in which I could see them not hitting the 45 win marker.
No, for sure. I agree with you 100%. I mean, we and I'm just looking at the standings real quick, and, you know, the only team we see that's falling out is Golden State, maybe, if Clay and KD can't, or if KD even resigns, but if Clay can't get back in time, we'll see how Steph and Draymond do together as the go-to guys for a team. And then, you know, you have some questionables out there. You got, like, somebody like the Clippers, who, if they don't get Kawhi, you know, are they a playoff team? Mm-hmm. So you do have the two teams that are going to be trying to get in there now with the Lakers and New Orleans trying to sneak in there. Maybe Dallas, if they have a good offseason too. So right now, just based on the roster construct that the Spurs do have even before free agency, I still pinpoint them as a playoff team, unless, like you said, like, they trade DeMar and then they try to give more responsibility to Lonnie or some of those younger guards. And then obviously that would be live or die by how they fare in their next year.
And then because it's the Spurs, we still couldn't rule them out of winning 45-plus games.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you so much for giving us an hour of your time this morning. I really appreciate it. If you guys are not following Paul on Twitter, change that immediately. @PaulGarciaNBA, spelled exactly as it sounds. He covers the Spurs for Project Spurs and is also the host of the SpursCast podcast. If you want to follow them over there, it's @TheSpursCast, also spelled exactly as it sounds. Thank you once again, Paul. I'm sure we will be pestering you at some point again in the future. Until next time, though, I leave everybody else with a shout-out to the one, the only, the legendary, and former Spur, Kyle Anderson.